generating a great deal of its wealth, but they really don't have any place in the system. In 594, the Athenians appointed a man by the name of Solon. To this day, we still think of lawgivers as Solons. They appointed a man by the name of Solon, a Eupatrid, a man from a very old, old, important family, as nomothete, as lawgiver. He was given an opportunity, really, to make a whole series of legal provisions to try to introduce some reform into the Athenian system. Now, Solon was an interesting person in lots of ways. He was a moderate. He was a person without personal ambition himself, as far as we can tell. He didn't seek to make himself famous. He didn't seek to aggrandize himself. He didn't seek to line his own pockets. After, he was able to do this because he was wealthy enough to sustain it, after he passed his reforms, he left Athens for 10 years. Because he wanted the system to work without him there to pull the strings and push the buttons. He wanted the system to work for the Athenian people. So what kinds of things did he do? He's got wealthy landowners who really don't want to share power. He's got merchants who haven't quite found a place in the system. And he's got farmers who are suffering from economic cycles of boom and bust. So what's he going to do to help these people out? One of the first things he did was he abolished many debts and debt slavery. One of the things that happened to large numbers of farmers, and of course many farmers face this situation today, you borrow this year to get your crop in the ground, and boy, you hope that you can get that crop back out of the ground and harvest it in the fall and have enough money, A, to pay your debt back, and B, to put something in your pocket for yourself until next spring when you put your crop in the ground again. Well, if the crop fails or if the price falls dramatically, you fall into debt. And in Athens, when farmers fell into debt several years in a row, they could actually be enslaved by those to whom they were in debt. And some of these Athenians had even been sold overseas as slaves. So Solon puts an end to debt slavery, and he actually sort of bought back a certain number of the people who had been sold away. He changed the basic qualifications for office holding and for voting in Athens, from birth to wealth. Now, at first you may say, gee, that doesn't seem like such a big change, changing from birth to wealth, distributing the right to hold office, the right to vote for office holders. But what Solon did was actually very clever. He created a system that we could call timocracy. That is to say, division of political power according to wealth. Plutocracy is a system where the wealthy rule. You know, the golden rule, whoever has the gold rules. That's plutocracy. Timocracy is to say, according to a scale of wealth, you have power, you have places in this society. One of the things he did is immediately equate the wealthiest of the merchants at the very top of the system, because of their wealth, with the greatest of the landowners. He built a place in the system for them. And so then right on down a scale. Basically, he created four classes by wealth. But he divided up then political participation according to wealth, and he found a way to build the merchants in, and he found a way even to mitigate some of the old powerful families who were a bit less wealthy than some of the other old powerful families. You might wind up with less power under Solon's system than you had had previously. He created a council of 400 that set the agenda for the assembly of all Athenian male citizens. Now, that's interesting. That is exactly the opposite of the system at Sparta. Here in Athens, a relatively small group chosen amongst the population as a whole, all right, not men over 60 or something of the sort, a relatively small group set an agenda, but the large group, the assembly of all Athenian citizens, got to say yea or nay. Now, it's true that the assembly was not accorded early on much initiative, but nevertheless, they had the opportunity to vote on issues put to them by a council of 400. Well, Solon institutes this system. Fairly moderate, actually. Solon was also a bit of a poet. He wrote a poem talking about how he was like a great bird, and he put one wing over one party and another wing over the other party. Both parties were, in the generation after Solon, angry about what he had done. Some felt he had gone way too far. Some felt he hadn't gone nearly far enough. It's an interesting thought. I mean, if you were a politician and you had people on both sides of you who disliked you equally, might that be a hint that you'd done about the right thing? Well, I don't know. I'll leave it to you to decide that. But there did remain problems. Not all of the difficulties, not all of the stresses in the Athenian system had been addressed by Solon's reforms. And as a result, round about 560, the lower classes elevated a man by the name of Pisistratus to a very mild form of tyranny in Athens. He really left most of the existing institutions in place and ruled alongside them, even ruled through them. He didn't really supplant the institutions, so he wasn't quite a tyrant in the 7th century Greek sense, and he certainly didn't have the kind of domineering power that some of those tyrants had had. He, and then his sons after him, dominated the Athenian political scene for about 40 years. What did Pisistratus do? Well, in the first place, he respected most of Solon's system. He didn't really change Solon's system dramatically, but he did redistribute some land. You see, one of the interesting problems with Solon's system, Solon put an end to debt slavery, and Solon bought back certain numbers of people who had been sold into slavery. But if you bring back a former farmer, and you don't give him any land, what's he to do? He becomes part of an urban poor. He becomes part of a permanent underclass.